$95,000.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Crean.
You heard the man, that's the plan. Rolling through another great one on the Press Box. Lots of spirited discussion, and as we were talking about during the break, this is when it's really fun, because it's not a you're right, I'm wrong, or I'm right, you're wrong kind of thing. It's just an open discussion where we have a lot of good interaction, and we can both make our points, and we can break it down for you, as we both know that we both care deeply about this baseball team and want the very best for them. So it's a lot of fun, and that's why I enjoy working with you, and glad to have Aaron back and on the mend and healthy as we continue to move forward and get through the rest of this week and then go from there. People were asking about late hits. It will be back. It is a part of the station, so you can tell the peeps that it's going to be back, what, Monday?
Monday. So this week I'm in with Joel the rest of the week, and then Monday when the new lineup starts, late hits returns back to its regular spot, 7 to 9 o'clock. Would you like a little breaking news?
Please give it to me.
Michael Brantley will start tonight in left field.
That's a good thing. Which injury are we fighting the most? The ankle from the base or the, I think he got hit in the face? Because I still saw the replays multiple times, and I'm not sure he ever got hit in the face. His arms were in the way, but because everything with Michael Brantley is like you have to immediately freak out, he was yanked from the lineup, and there was thoughts of a concussion, and everybody was worried like crazy, and he's okay.
Yeah, the ankle is, the foot ankle is the one that I worry about. If he's already back onto the field, clearly there's not an issue with concussion. So the injury to be worried about is his foot. And, you know, you've got one left fielder with a bad foot, one left fielder who's got bad knees, and then another left fielder who's really an infielder. So it's
you have two outfielders, by the way, that's heart rate doesn't get over just walking speed at any time in the outfield either. Because Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, the sense of urgency is a term that they've never even thought about having or worried about or doing something with.
You want all your outfielders to play like Lenny Dykstra, where they look like they are trying to run through a wall.
I don't want them to get drugged up and gamble the hell out of life.
Just on the field.
Okay.
Lenny always went full speed after everything. He'd go full speed and then have to stop and wait for the ball to come to him.
He had half a tin of chew in his mouth with spit leaking out all over the place, too.
Picking his nose and grabbing his jug. It was Lenny Dykstra all the time. It's amazing how many times the camera would catch him with a finger up the nose.
But nonchalant is a way of life in the outfield for Tucker and Yordan. And look, I love what both of them do at the plate. I'm just saying that's another reason why you've got to have a go-getter in center field. And I gave you full credit for the fact that you pointed out astutely about how the middle of the infield and the outfield is the key to successful defense and something you have to have, which is why Kyle Tucker doesn't belong in center field. And that is why if Michael Brantley, because of the stick that he is, and you can't, because Yordan is best bet suited for designated hitter, Michael Brantley you deal with as being a kind of a slow poke, kind of a just a go through the motions outfielder too. Tucker's better than average in right, but he doesn't belong in center. That's why you've got to have some speed and defense in the middle. Chaz is your only guy. I'm sorry. I know you want to see Jake out there, but the fact that Jake has not been given the opportunities yet.
Ripped a double the other day, though.
About time. Finally.
You would get four bats? I mean, he's finally got a,
no,
finally got
he
a
had,
hit.
He had three straight at bats in tough situations, and then he got a full game under his belt. But look, I told the listeners this, I think it was yesterday. It's one thing if you're just in the middle of the pack or you're fighting through the rest of the season and you're giving a kid at bats to try and see what you got. You're a team fighting to try and have the best record in baseball. It's not a time to be experimenting with minor league center fielders.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. Okay. Again, you're talking about a kid who was hitting 340 with a 1,000-plus OPS. Mm-hmm. If you're going to call up a kid to play center field, and you're the team that is the best offensive baseball, and he's going to hit eighth, and he can go fetch it in center field, is that a big drop-off from what you previously had? You know, in this particular case, going from Miles Straw to Jake Myers, I don't think that's – you're not really losing anything defensively. You're going to a more power bat versus a more speed-oriented guy. Although Myers had like 15 stolen bases at AAA, so it's not like he can't run. he's certainly more.
Let him run in Sugar Land. I can't run him out there when I'm trying to chase wins.
Or if you're going to run him out there, bat him eight. The same thing that you would do with Chaz McCormick. I'm with you. If you're going to call a guy like that up who's absolutely raking the hell out of the ball, you don't call him up to sit him. You call him up and play him or leave him the hell down in AAA. So none of this makes sense. All right, the idea of, hey, we're going to trade Miles Straw. You traded Miles Straw to get relief pitching. Was did you need relievers more than you needed Miles Straw? Yes. Is Miles Straw a long-term part of this organization? No. Therefore, it's not a bad deal. The deal makes
sense.
Well,
and if your manager's not doing what you're telling him to do in terms of who to play and who not to play, you can solve another. You can kill two birds with one stone and take him completely out of the organization.
And that that might be the foreshadowing to how this year ends, as you astutely pointed out a couple of segments ago. But you've got to have either Chaz or Jake playing center field. Period. The end. The only reason the only time it's excusable to play Kyle Tucker in center field is if you've got two speedy guys. In the corners. And if why would you have speedy guys in the corners and not have your fastest guy in center? Now, I don't agree that Kyle Tucker doesn't go after balls. I've seen Kyle Tucker go after plenty of balls, make really nice diving catches. No, he never looks like he is going full speed, but he's 6'4".
I've also seen him make enough plays that Chris Berman would have described with rumbling, bumbling, stumbling. I've seen some of those, too.
Sometimes, especially when he first came up and he looked like he was afraid of the wall, there were those days.
Yeah,
but he's very good in right field. He's got a good feel for the corner. He's got a very strong arm. He's got an accurate arm. Leave him in right. I don't understand he's playing really well in right field. Let's move him. Why are you messing with what works? For the whole season so far, look, Chaz has played pretty good center field. And he's had, even though he didn't hit for a great average, he's given you way more power than you ever could have expected. Why are you messing with it? These are things that you know, I don't quite have an explanation to. I don't know if there is one other than no petty like sports petty. But I think eventually they'll get it right, and we'll see either Chaz or Jake Myers in center and Tucker playing right, and whatever the rotation, the musical chairs in left field, that'll be their position where they roll it around.
I have concerns because I care. Because I want this team so desperately to bury everyone by winning it all this year. But that's the concerns that I have is based on the fact that this is a competitive World Series type team. This isn't a team that's trying to figure out its future. The future starts at the end of this season when you've got some tough decisions to make with Correa, when you've got to figure out if Verlander or Greinke have a chance of coming back or they're both gone, what you're going to do with that money, how you're going to get this starting pitching and everything else shored up for the long haul. You got some relievers that you traded for, you got to sign. Those are all concerns for next season where you can start experimenting in center field with getting minor league players more at-bats, when you can start figuring out guys that are going to be your everydays. But for right now, everything has been magnified because of the last homestand, because of the fact that, like I said, the objects in your rearview mirror are closer than they appear to be, and that's a concern. So now you can't screw around anymore waiting for this next burst of uptick that you're saying is going to happen like it has for the last 6 years. You can't. You know you have to have your best players to at least have that happen, right?
It would be fortuitous if you Correct. Had all of your best players available.
So if it's going to go down like you promised me, basically, it's going to happen.
They haven't really had that all year. They really haven't put out their full lineup much at all this year. They haven't put out their full rotation much at all this year. And only at the deadline did they finally get a bullpen. So if you think about it, they've been piecing it together all year long. And at the start of the season, they had made the decision, we're going to throw dice in center field with a couple of young guys that we know can play defense. We hope they're going to hit.
But, Pat, you're piecing it together, right? You're building the puzzle. At this point, there should be a few little holes or corner pieces missing here or there. But the picture is very clear. Right now, what you're painting for me is not a clear picture. Due to injuries, due to continued experimentation, due to resting, due to the things that worry me the most. This is why I have the anxiety. If I felt as confident as you did that everybody's going to be healthy, that the starting pitchers are going to get back to where they were, like, and the offense is going to hit, they're going to get the timely hits, the bullpen obviously seems to be in a very good spot, better than it was before the deadline, I would be a lot more at ease, too. My blood pressure is rising because of the fact that they are losing, and they're losing still the teams they should be beating.
All right, but just like you just said, we're talking about a small sample size, right? We're really looking at the last four games. And, what, there's another 50-something games to go.
Like 50 even.
There's a lot of baseball to play. And to think that they, with the amount of talent they have, that they're somehow never going to get hot again because this team seems to get hot every couple of weeks.
Think about what you just said. There's a lot of baseball still to play. That's what worries me the most.
That's what should give you the most excitement.
No, because the way they were going about this after the deadline was, we got this. We got a 6-game lead on the A's, so we're going to be win the division. We're going to be in the playoffs. Our only concern now is trying to get that best record in the American League, and maybe as icing on the cake, we'll get the best record in baseball. Instead, they got to be real careful because there are so many games left to be played, and there are so many objects, not only in their rearview mirror now, but teams in front of them that weren't in front of them before, like the White Sox and the Rays, and teams that you thought you were going to be better than. That's why I have concern.
They've all got to play, you know, that many games too. And, you know, for the Astros to have an easier schedule going out because they played a very difficult first half and say, all right, hey, this team is 20 games over. And no, they haven't had a full offense and they haven't had a full rotation and they only recently got a bullpen. These are things that you should be happy about. They've been piecing it together all year long. They're still winning. They still find ways to get hot. They still find ways to get off the deck, even though they really haven't been 100% the entire season. So give them a little bit of time. 50 games left is a lot of baseball. At some point, they will get hot because this is their history. They get hot. I have no reason to think they won't get hot until we close the season, and they don't. Now, if five guys suddenly go out because everybody gets hurt, there is no team in baseball that can overcome that. It doesn't matter.
I don't need five guys going out. I just need the guys coming back to finally be back, not be close, not be in the dugout, not be in a hoodie, not be not on the road anymore, not be with that crazy tape on their neck. I need guys that are going to be back when they said they're going to be back. I have concerns about Bregman. I'm also now starting to worry about Yuli.
I'm not worried about Yuli yet. And I'm really not worried about Bregman yet. If we get to August 20th and then they try to push him back another week or two, I'm only worried about Bregman because that'll be 3 months. And it's not just about getting him back. It's getting him back, having his timing right, and getting him able to play like Alex Bregman as you get into October. You don't want him coming back in September and then, you know, he's 2-for-36.
I also don't want you on August 20th looking at a place of less than strength when you're looking at trying to catch teams that you've been ahead all year. That's the thing that concerns me too. Handle it now, handle your business, and take care of everything and get it right while you're still in a place of strength as opposed to, like we said before the deadline, if you do nothing. And the closer you got to the deadline, you had to do things because you were actually trailing in the division and all over the place. All of a sudden, all these positions of strength where you were sitting on top of the world are slipping away. And I don't want on August 20th to have them looking up at teams, not only in the division, but to make the playoffs.
And this goes back to one of the other conversations that we had on deadline day, which was they really needed to go get another starting pitcher. And they didn't get it. And we might be seeing some of the ramifications of that, especially if they continue to go on this route of, well, we're not going to get Christian Javier stretched out again and get him back into the rotation. They might not have a choice, and they would have that choice if they had gone and gotten another starting pitcher.
All right, good conversation continues. Hour number two is just getting started. You guys can be a part of it. HRNP listener line 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number. If you text, put your name on it so I can rip you on the air. Otherwise, just have conversations with us on Twitch and Twitter where we're here for you on a regular basis, responding, discussing, and having a good time. It's the Press Box ESPN.
That?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Well, Pat's not a doctor, but he's not worried about HIPAA when he tells about himself. He's giving medical information away with interesting ailments on Twitch. I don't know if that's related to the breastbone or to the abdomen, but he kind of let the cat out of the bag in a certain way about what he's been dealing with. But I'm glad he's here today, as well as Aaron Raybould back in the chair as we get you through your afternoon, having a good old time discussion, a whole bunch of sports and other things. We can change gears a little bit. We've been pretty Astrocentric. I did notice this and wanted to get your guys' opinion on this because, again, I'm of the notion that, look, I don't think Deshaun Watson should be anywhere near this current team when they're on the practice field. I don't find any benefit in the fact that he's still your biggest asset, but he just missed five games with some mystery ailment that may or may not have happened while he was playing safety on the scout team or scrounging around on the sidelines. And if he's not going to play for you, and they just announced today, and Adam Schefter found out that Deshaun Watson is not in the plans to travel to Green Bay this weekend for the preseason game. He's out for the preseason opener. Good. He should be. And he also should stay completely healthy and completely away from this team until all things are ironed out and he can find his next home.
I mean, if they wanted to punish him, they would have actually made him go to Green Bay.
That's not nice, but true.
I can't
argue that point. I'm from Milwaukee, by the way, so I don't take it personally because I know what a hellhole Green Bay can be during the week and not on Sundays.
Is this not another perfect example of there's no petty like sports petty? No, Deshaun is in a position, all right, I got to show up to protect my money. So for all the talk, all the mouth that you know, his camp let out of, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be a Texan. You guys need to trade me. He shows up to protect his money. So the Texans, rather than, all right, let's think about this here, fellow Texans people. What is the best thing that can happen? What is the upside to Deshaun Watson being at training camp? There isn't any. What is the downside?
But maybe there is.
He could get hurt.
Right.
He can be a distraction. We'll have to answer questions about him every single day, all day, which basically means dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge. What could possibly go wrong? Everything could possibly go wrong. So, you know what? Let's send him out there. You know what, Deshaun? You're going to do some individual drills. You know what, Deshaun? Why don't you go stand there with your hands behind your back on the scout team? He will give you number 23 so you don't have to wear number 4 while you're out there. What is the upside to any of this?
Well, I'm going to give it to you because he was in number 4 today, minus the ski hat, which I couldn't figure out yesterday in the 100-degree heat, in pads, talking to Cully and Caserio, while they were getting ready to start practice, and obviously the media wasn't privileged to whatever they were going through in practice, but according to multiple reports, including Charles Robinson, who has said the Texans, quote, have not given up on Deshaun being their quarterback this year, and even said the Texans will see if there might be an Aaron Rodgers type of solution to the problem. You can keep hope alive all you want, but there's a whole lot of things that are going anti-hope on you. Whether you can create some kind of a bridge with your irreconcilable differences or not, when you've got 22 other things on the side, not chase things, 23 other cases on the side with individuals involved in it that lead you to believe the NFL is still watching too, and there's so many different hoops you got to jump through. If you want to believe that he's back because they're going to figure it out and they're going to get along again and a divorce is not imminent, boy, I got some swampland to sell you in Florida.
And all this is the Texans leaking out some info to try to keep the price on Deshaun as high as possible. That's all it is. All right. They know damn well Deshaun doesn't want to be here. He has made it very clear.
Has he, though? Because I'm tired of this, like you said, skip the hot dogs and s'mores from his camp and the campfire in which information leaks out. Let me hear it from you one time, Four.
We heard it from David Culley.
I don't need rap lyrics on Twitter. Just come out and say it.
We just heard it from David Culley a few days ago. Nothing has changed.
That doesn't mean that he's come out and say it himself.
Well, first day of, like, we knew the first day of camp because every reporter had it. Deshaun has not backed down from his desire to be traded. Last week, Deshaun has not backed down
from
his desire to trade. He's not going to say it because that's his game, right? He doesn't come out and say anything. It always comes from his camp. That's his game. That's his charade. You can like it. You don't like it. It doesn't mean the information is not true. It's been consistent since February. So there's no reason to think that the reports aren't true. Deshaun still wants out. The idea Deshaun suddenly has said, you know what? I'm going to give Jack Easterby a second chance. Yeah, I got a better chance of hitting Lotto without buying a ticket. It's not happening. So this idea of, oh, well, you know, he's going to, we think that we can change. We think that we can have a so they're going to pay him more money on top of the money they've already committed to him to do what exactly? Does that somehow make him more appealing to other teams in trade? Hey, instead of having him under contract for another 4 years, you'll have him under contract for like one. There is no victory in any of the things that the Texans are doing. The only smart play is to tell him to go the hell home and then come out and tell your fans, you know what? Deshaun doesn't want to be here. We all agree Deshaun doesn't want to be here. Therefore, there is no reason for him to be at camp, take reps away from Davis Mills and Jeff Driscoll, who badly need the reps, by the way. There's no reason for him to be getting their reps. So let them have the reps, and when he figures out all his issues, we'll address them then. And then you wipe everything out in one shot.
You got to eat it, right? You got to just admit, I got to pay him because the league's not stepping in. But the worst thing could be is keep the circus going with him right in the middle of it.
Well, this is my thing, and I want to know, I wish I had somebody I could text who was there and say, how did this interaction today with Cully and Caserio happen? And when they're seen together standing next to each other at camp, who approaches who? Because I'm going to preface this also by saying, I understand no job in the world, no environment in the world is like working in professional sports. But if Watson is walking over to talk with them, that sends a whole different message than those two walking over to him at any point in time. Now, every single person has had somebody you worked with who you could not stand.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You wanted to get out of that environment. You hated being where you were.
It's never happened.
You just had to get out.
People should just do their homework.
Never happened.
But when you did that, did you ever want to hang out with certain, like, if you already had come out and said, man, I really can't stand this. I don't want to be around here. Are you going to buddy up with those guys?
Deshaun's issue,
approaching him and he's just being the polite thing, and you know, if he's already standing there by himself at practice and they walk up and they start talking to him, well,
they also said he's been mentoring the young receivers. He's been doing some things.
But if he's coming over but his problem is coach, GM, and hire.
True. No, it's not.
You don't.
No, right. Stop. Full stop. Deshaun's problem is not coach. Deshaun's problem is Cal McNair and Jack Easterby. He doesn't have an issue with Nick Caserio. He didn't get to hire him, but he doesn't have a personal issue with Nick Caserio. He doesn't have a personal issue with David Culley. It's not his choice of coach, but he doesn't have an issue with Culley. He has an issue with the people who hired David Culley.
I agree with that.
I think there's going to be some underlying tension where you're an offset. You are an arm of the person I hate. That means I don't like you.
See, I don't think so, because I think that, like we talked about, and I mentioned this yesterday, the fact that he already spelled out if he did truly, and I still think it's all through smoke signals in his camp, he hasn't really and rap lyrics, but the fact that he said, as long as Cal McNair is there, I don't want to be with the Houston Texans. Cal McNair ain't going anywhere. That's the thing. So I tend to agree with Pat that, look, he didn't pick Caserio and he didn't pick Culley, but there's nothing that says that I hate either guy or I don't like either guy. It's just that my issue is with a guy that ain't going anywhere. Or two. Redfish, bluefish.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the fact that, you know, Cal McNair's spiritual advisor is essentially the de facto president of the organization.
You know what I'm saying? Shout out to the fish.
You know what I'm saying? This is where so much disconnect is, because as we learned from last year, Jack Easterby is a massive point of contention. And I can tell you out at camp, because I've been out there, Jack Easterby is very prevalent. And he is not hiding.
He's
out there.
He's visible?
Very visible.
God, no one's covering that. I kept asking for the longest time. Like, we haven't heard from him. We haven't seen him.
You know why?
No one's talking about him. If he's visible, I would think people would be talking about him.
You know why nobody's talking about him? No one wants to lose their credentials. Because that will happen. I was joking with some other very prominent media members. I had taken a couple of pictures of Jack Easterby because he was out on the field. And to be fair to Jack Easterby, and this does hurt, trust me. To be fair to Jack Easterby, he has not been a distraction to the team. He is shouting encouragement. So guy made a play. He's like, yeah, good play, Chris. Good play, Chris. He's he moves things around. He brings some things out to the players when they need them. He offered to give water to the entire media. He has not been any kind of a disruptive influence or negative influence so far out there that I've seen. And he's been out there. You see him. He's out on the field. He's talking to players. He's talking with coaches. And of all the people, that dude should not be talking to coaches. What the hell does he know?
What is he, Bobby Boucher? Would you like some high quality
H2O? He sounds like the host at a party. At like one of those big fancy Super Bowl parties you go
to. I'm shocked that I'm hearing this, though.
They have specific hosts who walk around and make sure everybody's mingling. And, hey, can we get you anything? Does anybody need to come over?
So I had...
The fact that he's out there, this is news. This is earth-shattering to me. I didn't think he was visible anywhere.
So I had made it. I had been talking with a couple of very prominent national media members. And I said... I got a couple of pictures here of Jack Easterby. I wasn't going to say anything negative. I was just going to say Jack Easterby on the field. But I feel if I do that, I might lose my credential. And they basically all laughed and went, good call. And you know what? For as much as I've ruffled feathers in the Texans organization in the past, right now they've given me a credential for the first time in 4 years. So... I want to be able to look.
It's not unheard of though, because I lived it and I know personally that upper management will yank a credential and threaten to do a lot more if you aren't the good soldier in the media. That's a fact.
And I think Jack Easterby is off limits. You're not going to go out. You're not going to go after Jack. You're not even going to cover Jack unless he wants you to. He's off limits, and if you try to go in any other direction, you're going to have problems. So I just kept it in my back pocket, and I didn't do anything. But to be totally honest with you, Jack was not a negative influence on the field. He wasn't generating
unnecessary anything. I don't care. This is mind-boggling to me that more media – maybe you got something here, too, because more media members, I'm surprised, and camera guys didn't at least get the token shot of Jack, because everybody seems to believe, because we don't hear from him, that he's not out there, that he's in hiding, that he's just trying to avoid the negative criticism. You're saying he's front and center.
Playing video games.
Yeah.
Very much so.
While they're getting ready for Sunday school. I don't know, man. That's crazy to me. Good information from PC there. All right. 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show. Coming up next. Keep it right where you got it. ESPN. The time I don't. Maybe I can't make what it may take to leave this thing behind. But I shut my eyes and cross each line. And every time. Keep on running back. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. ESPN.
97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, second half of the show getting started right now on the Press Box. As you heard the man, it is Pat, myself, and good to have Aaron Rabel back in tow as we get you all the way up until 4 o'clock today, talking about the local sports, talking about the national happenings. Whatever, if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, bring it to us. We'll get to it as well. 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Put your name on it if you're going to text. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter is the place to be as you keep up with us and get the discussion rolling on different topics. Talking little Texans. They do play at Green Bay this weekend. From a flip side, you're not going to see Aaron Rodgers. You're going to get a whole lot of Jordan Love. But you're going to see Randall Cobb, maybe.
There's a little bit of breaking news coming out that I want to...
Well, you're going to do it again.
I want to poke your... I want to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, don't poke anything. Just tell me what you're feeling here.
All right. So Manny Pacquiao, Errol Spence is
I
off,
saw that, yeah.
Because Spence has a torn retina in his eye. which that's a pretty significant injury for a boxer.
Dude can't catch a break after the car accident.
I feel like this is a blessing in disguise from Manny Pacquiao.
There's no doubt Errol Spence should have been a heavy favorite and could have done some serious damage. I keep saying this. I mean, Pacquiao, I guess people say he hasn't lost that much and he keeps coming back. Good, because I see all these fighters trying to come back at different ages. By the way, I have to talk about a miraculous comeback in another way at some point from a topic that came up yesterday as it relates to Oscar De La Hoya. But I'll stay with this one with you for now. The fact that in looking at this, it seemed to be a gross mismatch. But Errol Spence Jr., from the time we covered the fight in Dallas, ever since then, he's had nothing but bad luck.
Where he absolutely pummeled Mikey Garcia.
Yes.
I mean, and Mikey Garcia is a really good fighter. And Mikey Garcia couldn't get inside on Errol Spence to save his life. Manny Pacquiao was never going to get inside on Errol Spence. And Errol Spence certainly had a lot more power than Manny was going to be used. Manny's always had trouble with the larger, longer fighters because he's got to get inside on them. And, you know, recently, especially now, he's basically as old as we are. He can't get inside. He was never getting inside on Errol Spence. Errol Spence was going to turn his face into mashed potatoes. And that is not how I want to see a legend like Manny Pacquiao, like, going out late in his career, just getting the hell
Look
beat
at
out
all
of him
the legends
by
trying
a new
to
guy.
Come back. Holyfield's trying to come back. Oscar De La Hoya was contemplating coming back. You see all these different guys that, and I'm not talking about the staged celebrity death matches. I'm talking about guys that still, Holyfield's still out there as early as the start of this week, talking about the fact that he feels like he's in his 20s or 30s. He wants to keep doing this. The question in my mind is why?
Because he needs the money.
It's ridiculous, man.
Isn't that why every boxer comes out of retirement? They need the money. And Holyfield, in his prime, was an incredible fighter. That guy had so much guts. It didn't matter. You could hit him with a brick house, and he just kept coming. Holyfield had an incredible chin. He had this innate ability to withstand incredible amounts of damage and continue to be able to fight and throw punches as hard as he could. That's what made him such a great fighter. I mean, his wars with Riddick Bowe were all-time fights. I don't want to see Evander Holyfield, 50-plus years old, getting in the ring with somebody half his age and something happening to him. I'd much rather see Holyfield's son, who is an up-and-coming fighter, who has had some really nice fights. I'd rather see him fight because he can fight.
But honestly, Pat, it's a dying breed, the people that want to see real, true boxers box. It's getting to the point where more people want to see celebrity deathmatch, and they want to see the staged
entertainment value
cash grab
matters, because that's where, when people say, oh, we have to get the younger audience, we've got to get younger. That's what the younger audience wants. The younger audience doesn't have, and when I say younger audience, I'm talking like generally like 25, 26 and under, right?
A lot of people feel the younger audience is in the wheelhouse.
This era of fan isn't the fan who sits there and watches 12 rounds. They're not the fan that watches 9 innings of baseball. They're the fan that is watching everything on like the Red Zone channel, so they only see the scoring plays, or they're watching the highlights, or they're getting on YouTube and they're seeing, you know, a cut up version of things real quick. They don't have, like, because everything in their lives has always been, I have a computer, I have a phone, I have a tablet, I can speed through everything. It's all about the entertainment
but
value.
It is. That's what I'm saying. So that's the thing where it's going to be a lost art to be a world champion boxing prospect or an up-and-coming boxing, you know, prospect, because of the fact that it's all about the quick money hit. It's all about the pay-per-views of Floyd Mayweather Jr. and one of the Paul brothers, or, you know, Screech, RIP, but he was doing this long before it was hip. But you wanted to see a guy from Saved by the Bell fight some other has-been one-hit wonder? Well, it seems to be that, like, that's where it's going, because that's where the cash is, because they're not training as hard. They're not doing the sweet science. All they're doing is Lamar Odom versus some...
Some guy was like a foot smaller than him and destroyed him.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Now Lamar's going to fight like an actual fighter, and I don't think that's going to go very well. Now you got Jake Paul is going to fight Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
Now, Woodley isn't Ben Askren. You know, Woodley can punch, but he's not a big-time striker. I think there's a lot of interest in that fight because people want to see a
But again, Pat, Jake it's Paul not who, true fighters.
People want to see, can Jake Paul back up his mouth, or is Tyron Woodley finally going to shut him up?
Everybody keeps hoping that someone finally shuts him up, but you know what he keeps doing? He keeps laughing all the way to the bank, getting his tattoos, knocking hats off, and putting cash in his back pocket.
And all your 20-something-year-old fans freaking love this.
It's not what boxing's supposed to be.
Well, it's not what we knew boxing to be. Now they got concerts in between matches. They got like some big act coming out, performs a couple of songs. Then the next fight comes on. Then, you know, you got Snoop there ringside because now he's like a part owner of Triller. So now you got Snoop's name behind it. They are doing things completely different than anybody else has ever done. And so far, they've been successful. The question is, how long can they maintain the success and build on it? Or at some point, does it all crumble? And does it crumble if essentially you lose the Paul brothers? Like, are they the ones who, you know, their social media following is so big that they're generating a lot of interest in this? And if Jake Paul goes out and Tyron Woodley, you know, smacks him from pillar to post, is that it? You know, game over.
No.
But this is my question, is we all deal with this because it's our business. Are they going after the money? Like, are they actually targeting viewers who are going to spend money? Or are they targeting people who are going to beg mom and dad to let me borrow the credit card? And when mom and dad finally say, dude, you've ordered 4 of these fights, they've lasted 30 seconds. No, I'm not wasting my money on that. Are they actually targeting people who are in my age group, early 30s, who have a little bit of disposable income, who will drop it? Because I am much more likely to drop 60, 70, 80 bucks on a great prize fight if I respect the fighters doing it than two YouTube stars in a clown show.
That's the thing. So far, so good for them. Because whether they're doing it behind their parents' backs or however they're getting it done, they're being able to pay all their bills and pay all their fighters and seeing good numbers on the pay-per-view market enough that that's why they keep coming back for more.
And don't be surprised if we start seeing, you know, like there'll be local businesses, bars, wing joints, etc., that will show big fights or will show UFC
pay-per-view.
Don't be surprised you start seeing Triller fights come up on there because people want to watch. And if I can go get if I'm a business and I go get a Triller pay-per-view, and the next thing I know, my place is packed and there's a line out the door, I'm doing it every time. And when you order pay-per-views as a business, you pay per person based on the max occupancy right. of your building. So whether you sell out or not, you pay max. That's why when they have those events, some places will charge a cover. So if you can find a place that doesn't have a cover, you're all in. Shout out Big City Wings. They almost never have a cover for UFC fights. And you've got places that, do I have a cover? Or are places overpacking because, hey, I had to pay for 200 people, but you know what? I could probably, with my outdoor patio, my outdoor seating, I could probably bang in about 250. They're going to do it and make all that money. Pay-per-views can be a really big money maker for local businesses, but if you don't drive in, it's going to kill you.
But again, how many of these people who are watching this are of 22, 23, or even older, 25 or older, that are actually taking it serious enough that they want to go and spend $200 per like you and your girlfriend go out and you're spending $250 for the two of you guys to drink while she sits there and texts while you watch this fight.
Dude, how much are you drinking?
Those bars on those nights? Yeah. Shots, beers. When you're in your mid-20s, yeah, you could do that easily.
I agree with that.
But
I don't know. I guess I was a cheap date.
How many of these people watching in this audience is actually the people who are going to use their disposable income? Or is it, again, people who, I can run a credit card number. Guess what? I'm not paying the bill.
I think that, you know, as you look at younger fans, they don't go out to eat as much. They don't go to casual restaurants. There has to be an event. So they won't go out to eat at, you know, casual restaurant all month long. But if there is an event, that's where they go and that's where they spend their money.
I don't think so. I think they're all going to somebody's house and they're watching it, but they're paying for it and they're going for it. And like I said, the promoters and the Trillers and all the other people, they don't care where it's coming from or how they got it. They're getting it. And so they're going to keep doing it. So stay tuned. When Buffy the Vampire Slayer takes on the chicks from Charmed, it's going to sell out all over the place.
Whose card?
It's going to be bigger than any other fight you could put up there.
Whose card doesn't matter as long as it clears.
Okay, we talked about Holly Saunders yesterday, who I have talked about in the past. And she went from Vegas Dave, which I could never understand.
That had to be an arrangement.
Which I said, to the fact that we were talking about her career. Now she's out there telling you who she's dating now, and it relates to what we were just talking about here. Stay tuned for that as we wrap up hour number two and continue into hour number three. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
The change has come.
Starting Monday, August 16th, change is on the way. On ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Work it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, as we wrap up hour number two with this segment and then get into hour number three of the program, Press Box's Aaron Patton, myself, till four, talking about some things. We talked about yesterday when you were out, Pat, and I had some fun reminiscing about the early days before The Usual Suspects, when I was splitting time with Travis Johnson and Barry Laminack, and we had a national deal with Vegas Dave. And Vegas Dave started losing more than he was winning on all these picks.
This.
Yeah. And then we started getting told, not only is Vegas, because yeah, he would have to call on the show, but not only were we told, hey, it's Vegas Dave today, but one of his people from his camp would call in and say, don't ask him about this, 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 or this. Only ask him about, and it was all of his success stories of the past. And I guess his claim to fame was he once at the start of the year the Royals won it, he picked them to win it all. So we had, it started out to be like a clear backpack full of cash that you had to see. And then all of a sudden it was these designer handbags that had to be on the floor at the Staples Center when he was sitting courtside. And he ended up suddenly, remotely, out of the blue, being engaged to Holly Saunders. Holly Saunders, who's always been spectacular to look at from the time she was on Morning Drive. She had opportunities. She was sidelined. She was national broadcaster with Fox. And then when they got a golf contract, because she played golf at Michigan State, she couldn't ask a question to save her life. And instead of working at it at some point, and I don't know if this started with the relationship with Vegas Dave, she figured out there was another option for her to kind of walk away from the sports broadcasting field and make more money just exposing herself on the internet. But it's worked out evidently fairly well for her.
It was before that, because I think when she stepped away from broadcasting, she was dating
Eric Casilius or whatever.
No, she was married to him.
Cliff Kingsbury after that.
That was, yep. She had already stepped away from broadcasting when she started dating Cliff Kingsbury. So, that was years and years ago, because this Vegas Dave thing with her has been, what, 2 years strong now at least?
Yeah, because she posted the picture of her congratulating Kingsbury for getting hired by the Cards.
And she was wearing a Cardinals hat, I believe. Yeah. So that's when that was going strong for a little bit, too. But the Vegas Dave thing, and to wrap up yesterday. But at a certain point, Travis Johnson, who didn't give a rat's ass what you thought.
Love Trap.
One of my boys, he basically was like, no. Because we got the whole, here, Vegas Dave's on next, and don't ask him this and this. And Trap's like, no, hell no. He was 0 for 8 this weekend. We're bringing that up. We brought it up. And Vegas Dave was MIA for the rest of the time. He never showed up and called in for another one of his appearances. It wasn't our fault. It was his. If something was going on, he was out. But then all of a sudden, he resurfaced. And suddenly, he was engaged to Holly Saunders. And suddenly, she was moving to Vegas. And suddenly, she had big things on the horizon. Then all of a sudden, Vegas Dave was living in his parents' basement, literally, and moved back home. They were no longer a thing. And we were talking about this yesterday. She occasionally does some pay-per-views. And I think it was for The Zone. But she did a boxing event a few months ago. And suddenly, in her red leather pants, she was interviewing Oscar De La Hoya.
Now, this is actually quite hilarious, because if we recall the last time we saw Oscar with attractive women, there were two of them. And apparently Oscar was wearing some things that men don't usually wear. And there were some kitchen utensils and there were openings and Oscar liked them in places where he shouldn't like them. And it was a really big story.
Well, now it's a big story that they're an item. And they actually went out in public the other night for the first time. And while Oscar was lifting his shirt to show his abs and show that he was still in shape, Holly was making sure to touch the areas that he was showing and show that they were a couple. And now Holly Saunders has moved from Vegas Dave to Oscar De La Hoya.
She upgraded.
Okay. Well,
bank account? She upgraded big time.
Oh, bank account. I was going to say, otherwise, it wouldn't be much to upgrade from Vegas Dave. What is he, like 4'9"?
Oh, none of that matters. It's all about the bank account.
When we say personality, is probably a wash.
Okay.
Oscar's, as we know, Oscar has some interesting quirks and likes. I won't use the F word. That ends in ishes.
And I don't know what she's making on the. And again, I seriously don't. I know the concept behind OnlyFans. Is that what it's called?
OnlyFans.
I don't know. I didn't know the exact name of it, but I know that a lot of people can make a lot of money at that. But I know she's got her own website. She does a lot on Instagram. And because of it, then if you follow through and then you get her subscriptions. But are you telling me that that's bringing in – because she's driving – every time you see her in one of these Instagram videos, she's driving some elaborate exotic car. She's living in one of the high-rises in Vegas. She's doing all these things. And it's hard for me to fathom that the national broadcasting deal she had was paying less than what she's making doing all this stuff on the internet.
There's people who make seven figures easy on the internet just shaking their tail. They get sponsored, and every video they put out has a sponsor. So they're getting paid all kinds of money every time they post. You have a little video before or after, and they get there's a lot of money. If you have a ton of followers on any of these platforms and you're putting out
more so than being a sideline reporter and a broadcaster for Fox?
It might be even money. And what's easier? Shaking your butt in your own in the comfort of your own home or obviously, flying around the country?
You're not traveling. All you're doing is working out and then working the lens and then doing it all over again and going to Cindy's or one of these shops to get new outfits.
So back in April, she had done an AMA on Instagram to let people ask her questions. And somebody said, why are you doing photos like this and not covering golf anymore? And she said, because she doesn't love golf. She said, quote, because I don't love golf. I'm not passionate about it. I also make 20 times as much money doing these photos as compared to my salary at Golf Channel.
Literally, that's 20 Golf times. Channel. But then she had bumped it up because remember now, Fox got some of the made. They got at least one major and she was awful at golf. Her questions were just atrocious. But she was good to look at. Greg Norman obviously had a lot of interest, but she was someone that was easy on the eyes, that was doing the majors for golf that Fox had and doing sideline reporting for college football. I got to believe that's a better salary than the Golf Channel.
I mean, as of, I don't know how reliable this website is, playersbio.com, but as of 2021, she's reported to be worth $6.5 million. Her annual earnings are about $2
million. She's making $2 million a year.
For pictures
showing
her. To
shake her butt.
Yep.
Good for her.
Showing the goods.
Good work if she can get it. You know, and then, like you said, I mean, I think that a lot of it, too, is then you do the mentions of who does your plastic surgery, your Botox, and your other health benefits, and they probably give it to you for free as long as you're out there promoting that, hey, when you need this done or this done, all you got to do is go to this guy because he's the best.
And we know what happens when you get just one plastic surgery too many. Better have invested those funds.
Ever seen Botched?
No, but I've heard about
it. Oh, my God. It's entertainment at its finest. The people that have done exactly that and more and then come in and think that there's some quick fix.
Yep. But once you cross the line, that line of demarcation, there is no going back. You're just ruined.
Yeah, that's an entertaining show just for the stupidity of human beings and what they keep doing to themselves surgically. All right, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show comes up next. Plenty more to get to, including your calls, text, Twitch, tweet, whatever. You got it. Right here. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
Warning. You're listening. listening to ESPN 97.5.